Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Tony McCauley joins us now, reporter for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. Talk about the fairgrounds and racing. How you doing, Tony?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Take us back to the beginning of this story and how this all started before you tell us the end, please, because I think a lot of people, you know, you could say the end of it is fine, we're going to have racing, but there was a lot involved here. Take me through it.
Sure. Well, in May, Churchill Downs, which has run fairgrounds for the last 20 years or so, basically said that they were that they needed a public subsidy to cover lost revenue after a Louisiana Supreme Court decision told them that they could no longer have these new type of slot machines called historic horse racing. They said they were going to lose almost half their revenue after that court decision earlier in the year. So they started negotiations. They were looking initially for like $20 million or something like that. That was their starting point. But the state, Governor Landry and the legislature said, you know, you're a very profitable company and we're not going to be giving you any subsidy. And so it went on like that for a couple of weeks. Then they basically gave notice to say that they were going to give notice at the next meeting to say that they were not going to be able to go ahead with the racing season. Then there was a lot of discussion about, you know, would that mean they would sell fairgrounds and who might buy it, perhaps Dale Benson, and there was all that going on. And then the city council here changed the law to say, well, if they were to stop racing, they wouldn't be able to rezone it and kind of turn it into condos. You know, it's an historic site where racing has been since the 1830s. And there was a move at the state level as well to change the law to declare it a historic site. So it kind of blocked off their option to just pull out and sell it up to whoever they wanted to. And ultimately, then they've just backed down and said, at least for this season anyway, we're going to have a normal racing season starting November 20th.
So tell me about these slot machines, because people get texted constantly. They don't understand what was going on with Churchill Downs. Who filed the suit? Who was complaining? Who was this? Who was that?
Yeah, the lawsuit was filed by the truck stop operators, who are basically competitors of Churchill Downs, which and Fairgrounds, which not only operate the track and the casino within the track, but a dozen other OTBs. So they were eating into the market share of these truck stop operators who have video poker games, because there's you know, they're much more attractive. There's much higher payout potentially on the historic horse racing, which are based on past horse races, but like anonymized. So you can theoretically pick which horses you want to win in these things, but most people just use them as slot machines, just randomized horse racing slots, you know. So the truck stop operators are the ones that brought the lawsuit, and they were successful. And what that meant was that to get these HHR, for short, slot machines in their OTBs and in the fairgrounds, the Churchill Downs would have to go through each parish to get a voter permission, a referendum, basically. So that's obviously a very cumbersome way to try to get those things back in, if that's the route they want to try.
I don't know if you looked into this or not, and I don't mean to ask you something you don't know, but I'm a little bit confused about this. It's based on historical horse racing, but it's anonymous. So why wouldn't you just make it up? What am I missing here? I don't understand why that works that way.
Yeah, I was looking into it a lot myself because I didn't really understand them before. Mm-hmm. I was looking into the story. So what it is there's a huge amount of data about all the past races that goes into the central software for these machines. Mm-hmm. And what you could do theoretically before you decide which horse races, you can choose either to make it an anonymous pull, or you can theoretically choose to look up the form of these anonymous horses at anonymous raceways. You know, it's pretty complicated to do it that way, and then try to pick a horse based on past form, just as if you were betting on a horse at a track. But it's, because it's so complicated to do it that way, it mostly just operates that people pick the anonymous, or sorry, the randomized pull on the slot.
Now, I guess the logic part of me thinks that, well, you're going back to look at past performances, but you don't know what the horses are. So are you talking about is mathematical projections here that you could just as easily make up as use old horse races, right?
Yeah, and you're not looking at real horses. You're looking at, data about, like, what they won and all that kind of stuff. So you're not really comparing. That's really the point. It's super complicated to try to do it that way, and it probably doesn't, help you to do it any better that way than if you just do it as a random slot. So,
but the bottom line is the machines were paying out more at the fairgrounds and off-track betting facilities than the video poker machines were at the truck stops. That's why the video poker people filed suit, and that's when the court said, no, this is a different type of gambling that would have to be approved by voters. Accurate?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, the real key point here, and it was decided in other courts too, like in Kentucky, the home state of Churchill Downs, that that these things operated basically like slots. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So they could pay out theoretically up to 100,000 jackpot, whereas the video poker is capped at 1,000. So that's why they were much more popular.
What this seemed like to me is a company saying, look, if you don't give us what we want, we're going to take our ball and go home. And government standing up to the company and saying, no, you're not, because it's our ball. It's not yours. The property remains here. You can, or you're going to have to run it as a racetrack if you want to keep it, or else you can sell it. And I would think that the fact that there was local ownership that had expressed interest was a big part of this too, Tony.
Yeah, I think all of it together, the fact that the legislators, both in the city and at the state level, they took action very quickly and they said, we're going to block off your exit route, if you like. And the fact that, Gail Benson said, she didn't say, I will buy it if it's up for sale, but she said she was monitoring the situation and that she, had a record of supporting, historic businesses in the city and all that kind of stuff. It was pretty clear that she would be interested and had previously expressed, and then they tried to buy it about 8 years ago. So I think, yeah, they were just kind of face down and their bluff was called, and they got their way in Kentucky with a legislative change to allow them to bring in these HHR machines a few years ago. They got a subsidy from Florida last year. So, Louisiana just said no. You make enough money, and even with the change in the law here, they made $150 million in revenue here last year, just here in Louisiana. So what's going to be interesting really is to see over the next, because they're a public company, we'll see what the revenue looks like over the next few quarters and see how much they've actually reduced because of the change in the law.
I want to believe that this is government standing up against powerful lobbies, powerful interests, and doing what's in the best interest of the taxpayers. I desperately want to believe that. But then the cynical part of me looks at it as this is big interest against big interest, and the bigger interest won. Is there anything to be said there or not, Tony? About who is opposed to the, I don't know, where does the Racing Commission fit in any of this or not?
I think two things could be true. I think you know, they stood up and said to a big company, you're not getting a public subsidy. Mm-hmm. You know, the other big interest was the truck stop operators, and then you know, the horse owners are on the other side of this. So the change in the law that they passed in the last legislative session to give to allow truck stop operators and bars to have more video poker machines. Part of the change in that also earmarks a certain amount of money to pay horse owners more purses at the racetracks, not just fairgrounds, but the other three as well. So, if you wanted to be cynical about it, it's really shuffling money around between a few other interests in this space,
or the gambling
and the horse racing space.
Cynical or honest accounting. Let me ask you about next year. What does this portend for after this racing season next year?
Well, I think that's going to be the big question going forward, is how this all plays out. As I mentioned, how much revenue fairgrounds actually will have lost, and whether that might mean that, after this upcoming racing season, which they've now committed to, whether or not they will still be looking for an exit from Louisiana and who might buy it. There's kind of a broader question then about supporting horse racing in the state and how it's financed and how many racing days we should have at the various tracks, particularly fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the questions going forward.
And I guess the other question is, when it comes to the fairgrounds, or Churchill Downs rather, their corporation status, because a lot of times they're run it as a company, but then they have state entities, so they can show we had a loss at this state entity, but not with the big company, right? I mean, is their structure that way or not?
Well, they're a publicly listed company, New York Stock Exchange company, so they have to abide by certain accounting rules. But within that, yeah, you can obfuscate how much profit you're making, you know. So that $150 million is a net revenue figure for the state.
Mm-hmm.
What they would claim is that they have, you know, a lot of expenses that reduce their actual profit, but that's pretty hard to see because that's internal accounting, you know.
All right. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Tony McCullough, reporter for the Times, speaking to you, New Orleans Advocate. Bottom line, there will be racing at the fairgrounds this season, I guess starting at Thanksgiving. We're going to take a break. Come back, talk to Alexander Cranford, WWL Louisiana meteorologist, about the weather and about the tropics. And there's already been a named storm, in case you missed it. We'll talk about that. And then we're going to talk about the Pelicans. So a lot coming up. Stay with us. Tommy Tucker, WWL. Slow sports time of year? I don't think so. If you love football, don't miss our special broadcast live from Manning Passing Academy Friday. You can join Mike Dettelier, Steve Geller for Sports Talk live from Thibodeau at Nicholls State University. They're going to bring you to the 50-yard line at the premier football camp in America with the first family of football, Archie, Eli, and Cooper Manning. This amazing camp's been helping players reach their full potential on and off the field by embracing the fundamentals of football for key offensive positions, running back, tight end, wide receiver, and, of course, quarterback. And this year it'll feature elite quarterbacks Arch Manning, Garrett Nussmeier, and also a lot of different quarterbacks as well. So mark your calendar for Sports Talk Live from Manning Passing Academy Friday, brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health Center and WWL. Today on Sports Talk with Mike Dettelier, Steve Geller, Charlie Long, for round one of the NBA draft is tonight. Who would you like to see the Pelicans add with their two first-rounders? We'll talk about that in a little bit. Plus, LSU baseball celebrates their eighth national championship with fans in Alex Box Stadium. How's the Tigers' roster looking for another title run in 2026? Then, at 6, you can join WWL's NBA Draft Special from Pelicans headquarters. They're going to break down the draft for you, and they'll TV sideline reporter Andrew Lopez, writer, podcaster Jim Eichenhofer, Pels Radio studio host Gus Cattingill, along with Pels TV host and reporter Friend Summers. Huddle up with Mike, Steve, and Charlie 4 till 9 on WWL and the Odyssey app. Full night of sports tonight. Alexander Cranford joins us now from the WWL Forecast Center. Good morning, Alexander. How are you?
Good morning. Doing fine. How are you?
I'm okay. I must have taken a nap or something, because apparently we had a tropical storm, Andrea. I didn't know anything about it.
Yep, it lasted 12 hours, according to the National Hurricane Center. And yep, if you just did something yesterday, then you totally missed it because it formed apparently in the morning and then it was no longer a tropical storm by the nighttime.
So what is the rest of it looking like from, with I guess, off the coast of Africa with Saharan dust? I know here we are June the 25th, 25 days in the hurricane season, quiet so far. Of course, I don't know how much we can gauge from that, given the fact that it doesn't really heat up until August and September. What are we seeing off the coast of Africa with Saharan dust and so forth?
Actually, there's another huge plume of Saharan dust set to move into the Western Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico later this week and this weekend. So we're not too concerned about, you know, big systems coming from Africa right now. There have been a couple of little waves here and there, but they just haven't been able to get going because the conditions just aren't right. So I would say into the early part of June, at least, that's about as far ahead as we can look at this time.
Early part of July.
July. Yeah. And that's about as much as we can look ahead and looking quiet for the most part.
So when it comes to the Caribbean and places like that at this time of year, is the concern more in the Atlantic or the Caribbean? And does it shift as we get later in the season? And as the Saharan dust has nothing to do with the Caribbean, right?
Well, right. It can actually. Yeah. I mean, if it makes it to the Caribbean, then it makes it harder for things to form there, you know, and we have been getting these huge plumes moving all the way toward the Caribbean and even into the Gulf. But generally, I think just in June and July, there's something like 5% of a season storms form in June and maybe 6 or 7% form in July. So just when you look at a season, these really just aren't active months. Yes, we're officially in the season. We can get a couple of storms here and there. But as we all know, it's August, especially late August, and then that first part of September, especially, that we get all of the activity. So it's kind of interesting. Some of the, PhD, Phil Klotzbach kind of.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Experts in hurricanes, they sort of think perhaps there should be like a season within a season, you know, because we have this 6 month span, but so much happens in those two to maybe like 3 months in the middle of the season.
I was getting ready to say it's like preseason because, okay, we get through June and July. All right, big deal. So what? Yeah. We still got August, right? And August and September, that's when it really heats up and that's when we really got to start watching. But I guess we got to be thankful for small favors. What about La Nina, El Nino, or whatever the middle one is? I don't know. What is that? Where does that stand?
The middle one is the neutral phase, and that's what we're in right now. So we really, that hasn't been a big factor in this season's
neutral
forecast.
Nina?
Neutral, yeah. You kind of swing
Nina.
From one
is
side to the
it?
Other. You just say neutral. Oh. Neutral Nina. I like that, though. Yeah, Nutria. So you either have El Nino, where you have the warmer than average waters off the Pacific coast, and then around, you know, Peru and Ecuador, and then that causes all these changes in the Atlantic basin. And that is, you know, one thing that can definitely help to at least get you an idea of what might happen. And then there's La Nina or neutral phase where they don't really disturb, you know, as much. So we don't have either one of those really going right now. So I don't know. Could you say we're just like kind of right in the middle?
So the Pacific has been kind of active. We already have Hurricane Eric Can we infer anything from the Pacific to the Atlantic as far as hurricane season, or is it apples and oranges?
Yeah, it does. Oftentimes, if it's more active on the Pacific, it'll be a little bit quieter in the Atlantic. In fact, sometimes it's completely one or the other, and then sometimes later in the season it can shift. Certainly, it's still pretty active in the Pacific. Like you said, we just had Eric that, you know, became a pretty strong storm and made landfall on Mexico's coast on the other side, on the western side. And then there's another spot off the Central American coast that has a pretty high chance of forming soon. So we'll see if that one becomes another tropical storm and then potentially hurricane. That one is set to kind of move out over the waters, might not impact Mexico, possibly. You know, we'll see in the next few days.
Well, I'm going to quit
still
when
active
I'm,
over there.
I'm going to quit when I'm ahead. Thank you, Alexander Cranford. Okay. Appreciate it. Good news.
Absolutely.
We're going to stop right there.
Yeah, all right. We'll do it. And then we'll get back together.
You bet. WWO Forecast Center. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Jake Madison, host of Locked On Pelicans. Big night for the Pelicans tonight. They have two first-round picks. What are they likely to do? They traded C.J. McCollum. We'll talk about all that. We come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL, 936, 24 till 10. Traffic now on WWL. 941, 19 till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL 942. Call it big day for the Pelicans. And Jake Madison joins us now, host of Locked On Pelicans, to talk about it. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on to talk some hoops.
Thanks for taking the time. I know you've been very, very busy. Pelicans make a big trade yesterday. I was kind of sorry to see it happen because I like C.J. McCollum, but I guess in the bigger picture, it was the better thing. Give us the details for people that don't know and your initial reaction to it.
Yeah, the Pelicans shipped out C.J. McCollum and Kelly Olynyk along with a future second-round pick to the Washington Wizards in exchange for guard Jordan Poole, Sadiq Bey, who's a wing, and the 40th pick in the NBA draft that's this week here. You know, it was initially kind of a little shocking, and I agree with you on, you know, it's sad to see C.J. McCollum left, and even before you get into the on-court impact of everything, you know, C.J. McCollum did a lot of really great work in the community of New Orleans and really embedded himself here in the city right away, so it's always tough to lose someone like that, and a veteran leader in the locker room. But this was a trade the Pelicans, I think, felt they needed to make to simply just shake some things up. They're coming off a 21-win season last year. You can't just run it back with the same roster. You needed to do some bigger type of changes. And this is probably the first of multiple moves that are going to be coming for this franchise. But they get younger. Jordan Poole's 26 years old. C.J. McCollum was 34. And Jordan Poole's a little bit more of a dynamic guard. He plays a little bit more downhill, putting pressure on the rim, trying to score inside and creating for others that way, while also being a decent three-point shooter. And C.J. at this point in his career is a little bit more of a perimeter-oriented player. So I think this just gives the Pelicans that kind of slashing guard that they've really been missing from the roster right now.
Can you go back and say that the C.J. McCollum thing was a mistake or just times change?
Yeah, I think it's just times change, and we've seen the team have some talent on it and just never be able to put it all together, whether it's due to injuries or what have you, really. And I think it's led to the time that C.J. was here feel like a disappointment, but there are two playoff appearances during that time, so at least there's been some measure of success, but it's just kind of how it goes. You know, the other thing to keep in mind is the financials of the situation and the salary cap with the NBA. C.J. McCollum was on an expiring deal. You know, this was going to be his last year under this contract. The team could lose him for nothing, so they make this kind of trade to get, you know, guys that are under contract in the future in Jordan Poole and Bay. So I think this is also partially motivated by that, and sometimes guys are just kind of cap casualties in a sense.
So what did Joe Dumars do last week? And for those who missed it, what was the trade? Now I think the Pelicans have two first-round picks.
Yeah, they had a future first-round pick from the Indiana Pacers, so they traded that back to the Pacers and instead got the Pacers' first-round pick in this draft. And now the Pelicans, in tonight's first round, currently, could change, have the 7th overall pick and the 23rd overall pick. So they're looking to make two selections.
Who could they target at 7, and what about 23?
You know, they're in a good position to kind of let the draft come to them, and they don't need to force anything necessarily by position, which is a good spot to be in at the top of the draft. But I think they might be zeroing in on Duke's starting center from their team last year, Kamen Malawach. This is a guy who's 7'1" with a 7'6" wingspan. He's very mobile and does a very good job of just blocking shots. And the Pelicans have been missing that shot blocker for a little while now. So to be able to add some rim protection is a guy that I think they would really look at. The other name to maybe look at it, 7 overall, is Jeremiah Fears. This is, you know, a point guard from Oklahoma who's one of the youngest players in the draft. He just completed a very good freshman year at Oklahoma where he led him to the tournament. The SEC, the conference he played in, is one of the toughest. So to be able to average almost 18 points per game is very impressive for his age. You know, at 23, I think they'd love to get a guy like Walter Clayton Jr., the guard that led Florida to a national title this past season. I don't think he's going to be there, but I think you're going to see them eventually go the opposite direction of what they did with the 7th pick. If they draft a big man there, they're going to look to add a guard. It could be someone like Neek Clifford from Colorado State. You know, if they add a guard at the top of the draft, they're going to look for another big man. There's Thomas Sorber, who's kind of an old-school center from Georgetown. There's Maxime Reynaud, the French center from Stanford, who could be a three-point shooter. The Pelicans are going to have a lot of options in this draft.
When it comes to this guy from Duke, would the Pelicans be interested in him at all? I know he's from Sudan. He's got a work visa that's going to be revoked. I don't know how that would work out for them, or is there any exception that's available or anything, or do the Pelicans just stay away from that?
No, you know, I'm not sure how it works. I haven't heard any concerns about him being in the U.S. or anything like that. I do believe I read there might be trouble traveling to Canada or something like that from the U.S. You know, given the Toronto Raptors are there, you play them at least once a year in Toronto. That could maybe be a concern. But, you know, the interesting thing about Malawach is he's played for the South Sudanese national team, where it actually shows he can shoot a three-point shot. But I don't really know the legal logistics of it all.
Mm-hmm. How many second-round picks do the Pels have now?
Just the one at 40, and I wouldn't be shocked if they look to move that pick, whether that's trade it. You can often sell them for cash too, or just try and kind of move it for someone else. I don't think they're going to really be interested in carrying three rookies on the team this year, but given that Joe Dumars is coming in and really wants to put his stamp on the team, like, you never know.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about, you know, I'm going to go back to the movie Moneyball here, because I've seen the movie a dozen times. I still don't understand what the hell he does with getting one guy to pay for the other with the trades. How much of a puzzle is it in the NBA to put together a Rubik's Cube, whatever metaphor you want to use, but when it comes to putting together players and salary caps and who's got who and who can help who where and who's interested in this and future picks and all that, I don't know how anybody keeps track of that. Jake?
It's why they get paid the big bucks to be in the front office, I think, and that's why you've seen even over about the past decade or so, you see a lot of, you know, teams bringing in kind of like statistical people, you know, mm-hmm. to their front offices, not so much like former agents or former players or even scouts, but people that can look at all the statistical profiles and try and project and do that sort of thing, because it's really hard to win a title in the NBA, and it's even harder to have sustained success right now. The NBA just crowned their 7th champion in 7 years. So you see, it's really tough to build a consistent winner here. And, you know, that's, I think, a big reason why the Pelicans brought in Joe Dumars, who had done it in Detroit before while also being a successful player. So I think they're looking to try and kind of see if they can crack the code in a sense, but certainly easier said than done.
So bringing a guy like Jonah Hill in Moneyball, is that what you're saying?
It could be. You know, they're still filling out the Pelicans front office, so I think they're trying to get all different kinds of perspectives in there.
So how important is it that the Pelicans turn it around for this year, in your opinion?
You know,
or at least make – and how would you define turn around? Let me follow up with that.
Yeah, so I think the question is, like, do they really need to have a successful season, or how important is that? And I think it's pretty significant. You know, in my opinion, this needs to be the final year under Zion Williamson, unless you get some proof of concept, and that's him playing in the playoffs and them having some success in the playoffs. If you just get in through the play-in tournament and get swept in the first round, you're really not going to be accomplishing much other than just getting two extra home games every year. You want more than that. And so if you can't really prove it with the team as they're constructed going into this year around Zion Williamson, whether it's just the roster doesn't work or that he's injured and misses games, you can't keep running it back with the same core pieces, and you're going to need to make bigger changes. And that's going to then mean a Zion Williamson trade and just kind of maybe going through a rebuild, which can be painful, can take a long time, obviously not have success you want with that sort of thing. So this year, I think, is really important for deciding on the direction of the future. Is it, yeah, we're going to keep trying to win and win an NBA title, or we realize it's not working and we need to pivot and go in a completely different direction?
Somebody texted in. We like to bring the questions in from the audience. That the Pelicans division got much harder. Mavericks getting Cooper Flagg, number one pick. Spurs a former number one Wemby, who's a potential superstar that maybe who is a potential superstar in the Rockets. This message is discombobulated here. Just traded for Kevin Durant. So along those lines, is it going to be harder for the Pelicans to? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that has the bar been raised and now you get the Pelicans trying to catch up even more?
Yeah, that's I think, the best way to put it. The Western Conference is stacked. Basically, every team in the conference is going for it and trying to win. So it's going to be really difficult. Getting to just 46 wins might be an impressive season in the Western Conference, given the level of play that you're going to see on a night-in, night-out basis from some of these franchises. But it also just means it's tougher to, you know, figure out when your window to compete is. With all of these teams going in, you know, you're looking at a team like the Boston Celtics, who are basically selling off parts right now because of their salary cap situation, and the way it's kind of built into the NBA right now is you get like 2-3 years and then you're going to have to more or less dismantle your team and you're going to be bad for a little bit. And that's kind of the cycle they want. So is it maybe better for the Pelicans to start that cycle now, go through a rebuild knowing that you're not competing with some of the top teams in the West, and try and time this a little bit better?
Hey, real quick, somebody texted about, speaking of the monetary puzzles, can Jake explain a little bit about trade exceptions and how the Pels can use one with Sadiq Bey from the CJ McCollum trade?
Yeah, I talked about this on Locked On Pelicans a little bit today. They also created some financial flexibility under the salary cap in this trade with the Washington Wizards, and bringing in Jordan Poole. It gives them more or less, and this is a rough number, about, you know, $12 million to spend or so in free agency or to acquire another player in a trade. In the NBA, when you make trades, the salaries in general need to match. So if you send out a $20 million player, you need to bring back about a $20 million player, unless you have something called a traded player exception or a TPE. And these can be for various sizes. They're created through various means. But if you have one, you can just absorb a player's contract as long as it fits in that. So if you have a $15 million traded player exception, you can bring someone in making $15 million or less without sending a player. So it's a way to get around some of that salary matching requirement in trades to allow you to just not send anyone out, or maybe send a pick and get a player back. Pelicans have won from the Brandon Ingram trade right now. They might create another one from this trade. They may use it in a deal, or they just might use it to sign someone in free agency, but it's a way for them to just add someone else to this roster.
My eyes are glazed and my head is spinning, so I'm going to let you go there, Jake, while I understand some of it. Thank you, sir. Let's go, Pels. Jake Madison, host of Locked On Pelicans. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll find out where Newell's going to be today. Newell's on location. He wants to meet you. We'll find out where when we return on WWL.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.